This is the Bible Book Club. I'm Heather.
And I'm Susan.
And we're in the book of 1 Samuel.
Welcome to the club.
Last episode in chapter 17, it was the classic story of David and Goliath. Goliath was daily defying God. David overheard Goliath's smack talk and was infuriated that the Israelites were allowing anyone to talk about God that way. So David took avenging God into his own hands and defeated Goliath God's way. He stoned Goliath for blasphemy, which was the prescribed consequence for blasphemy, according to Moses.
In this scene, David's been transformed overnight from a pesky, inquisitive baby brother to a celebrated hero, honored court member, and soon to be royal family member. His resume will continue to grow as we read through 1 and 2 Samuel. But as David's story builds, a contrasting subplot is being developed. The demise of Saul, the king the people wanted, compared to the rise of David, the king God wanted. Saul, the bad shepherd of the people, is contrasted with David, the good shepherd. Saul became a king like all the other nations' kings, while David was a king with a heart for the Lord. Saul disobeyed the Lord repeatedly without repenting, whereas we're going to find that David's disobedience will be deeply repented. Scene 1, David falls in and out of favor, starting in chapter 18, where David finds favor first with Jonathan.
After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in the spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. Whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in his army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officers as well.
All right, let's talk about the characters in this scene. First, of course, we have David, who's now center stage. He's living with the king. He looks like the king's son because he's dressed in Jonathan's royal robe, tunic, and sword. He has a high rank in the army, and he is promised to become the king's son-in-law as a reward for defeating Goliath. Who is Jonathan? Jonathan was the first son of the first king of Israel, Saul, which made him the first prince and potentially heir to the crown. Now, despite the privilege of his position, Jonathan did not cling to the succession, and we will see he readily defers to David. Now, there is a chance that Jonathan did not covet the kingship because he had heard of Samuel's prophecy to Saul in chapter 15, verse 28, that the kingdom would be given to someone else. Jonathan may have recognized David as the future king, and that is why he gave David his royal robes. Now, Jonathan was most likely quite a bit older than David, which I never thought about this before. I had assumed that they were kind of like friendship age. They were not. Like David's three older brothers, Jonathan has been serving in Saul's army for some time. He was mentioned as a military leader way back in chapter 13, which puts him probably at least 10 to 15 years older than David. So now we can kind of almost see him as a little bit of a mentor. Let's talk about this covenant they had. We're going to get into it more in the next episode, but the covenant that Jonathan and David made was one of loyalty and friendship. In fact, their relationship is one of the best known friendships in the Bible. The great 18th century commentator, John Ellicott, described the key to Jonathan's friendship with David like this.
The long and steady friendship of Jonathan no doubt had a powerful and enduring influence on David, the greatest of the Hebrew sovereigns. The words, the unselfish, beautiful love, and above all, the splendid example of Jonathan have undoubtedly given color to many of the noblest expressions in David's Psalms. We read of his friendship as dating from the first striking deed performed by David when he slew the giant. It is clear, however, that it was not the personal bravery of the boy hero which so singularly attracted Prince Jonathan. These things no one would have admired more than the son of Saul, but it needed more than rare skill to attract that great love of which we read. What won Jonathan's heart was the shepherd boy's sublime faith, his perfect childlike trust in the Lord. Jonathan and David possessed one thing in common, an intense, unswerving belief in the power of God to keep and save all who trusted him.
The key to their friendship was their faith. It says in verse 1 that Jonathan and David were one in spirit. The Hebrew phrase means was knit or bound up. So that phrase, one in spirit, means was knit or bound up. They were knit together, seeing God's will as one, working in perfect accord with each other. David and Jonathan were one in the spirit and one in their purpose, to follow God's plan and fulfill God's purpose. Do you have a Jonathan in your life? Are you a Jonathan to someone else? If only there were more Jonathans in this world. If only there were more friendships like Jonathan and David. I feel like we have that at Bible Book Club. There are just four of us. Many of you probably haven't even heard of Buck and Haley, but they are here, always completing what Heather and I can't, always encouraging us to continue in God's purpose for this podcast. Well, David fell into favor with Jonathan about the same time that David falls out of favor with Saul in scene 2.
Continuing in 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 6, when the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with timbrels and lyres. As they danced, they sang, "Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands." Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. "They have credited David with tens of thousands," he thought, "but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom?" And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. The next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the lyre, and as he usually did, Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, "I'll pin David to the wall." But David eluded him twice.
Well, the Israelites are fickle people, and we learned that way back in season 2, in the book of Exodus, in Bible Book Club. With the spotlight now on David, it does not take long for the Israelites to start singing a new tune. David is greater than Saul, and Saul is insecure. Remember how Saul started his kingship hiding among the supplies in chapter 10? To add to his fear and insecurity, that evil spirit from God has returned. It sounds like the same one that tormented him in chapter 16. When David was brought to court to play for Saul and soothe his temper because of that spirit. But now, instead of being calmed by David's playing, Saul is tormented by the very sight of David because of his jealousy. Saul cannot control himself anymore, and he throws his spear at David. Saul has become a king like all the other nations. The nations keep trying to kill God's chosen people, and Saul keeps trying to kill God's chosen man. Saul is just like every other nation's king, exactly what God did not want for them. The lesson learned is to be careful about what you want. The Israelites wanted a tall king like all the other nations, but he had no heart. He was afraid Goliath would kill him, and he is afraid David will take his kingdom. Our eyes can deceive us. We must look at the Lord, not at the world, to develop a heart for what is right. The Apostle Paul in the book of Philippians talked about guarding our hearts like this in Philippians 4:6.
"Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put into practice, and the God of peace will be with you."
The Apostle Paul knew what Saul missed. Now, I know that's confusing because the Apostle Paul had been called Saul, but maybe that's another little Bible bender in there we can investigate later. The Apostle Paul knew what Saul missed, that insecurity and anxiety must be taken to the Lord. Then and then only will God's peace guard the heart and the mind. Saul missed it. He's losing his mind. His insecurity and anxiety are growing. His heart has become twisted and he is losing it. Now, Jonathan has not been deceived as his father has. He sees the Lord and the Lord's plan in his friend David, despite the example of his father Saul. This scene is the beginning of David's persecution. It will become a season of life-threatening harassment the last 14 years. 14 years that we're going to read about as we continue through 1 and 2 Samuel. Don't miss that. David becoming king did not happen in glory. It happened in persecution. During that time, Saul repeatedly hurled spears at David, tried to kill David purposefully on the battlefield, stalked David and tried to assassinate him, exiled David from his country and commanded the Israelites to go to war against him, and Saul took David's wife away from him and gave her to another man. So he persecuted him personally, publicly. It was all across the board. 14 years of misery. Saul caused David a lot of personal pain, yet David did not retaliate. Rather, he turned to the music he loved and poured out his emotion in psalms that we benefit from today. Continuing in scene 3, David's going to continue to find favor, and he finds favor this time with the people.
Back to our story in 1 Samuel chapter 18, continuing in verse 12. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David, but had departed from Saul. So he sent David away from him and gave him command over 1,000 men, and David led the troops in their campaigns. In everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. When Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he led them in their campaigns.
Saul was afraid of David because David had something Saul didn't. David had the Lord. David had success in everything because the Lord was with him. And David had the love of all the people because he was successful. The more David found favor, the more Saul was consumed by fear. Scene 4, Saul scrambles for a deadly alliance. Saul had promised that whoever killed Goliath would be given his daughter in marriage, but it hasn't happened yet. The relationship was supposed to be an alliance with the king, the marriage I'm talking about, that was a reward to the victor who defeated Goliath. But Saul has another motive now for a marital alliance with David, and it's to kill him.
Verse 17, Saul said to David, "Here is my older daughter Merab. I will give her to you in marriage. Only serve me bravely and fight the battles of the Lord." For Saul said to himself, "I will not raise a hand against him. Let the Philistines do that." But David said to Saul, "Who am I, and what is my family or my clan in Israel that I should become the king's son-in-law?" So when the time came for Merab, Saul's daughter, to be given to David, she was given in marriage to Adriel of Meholah.
All right, so Saul's strategy was to trap David into working for his daughter Merab by fighting for Saul against the Philistines in the hopes that the Philistines would kill David while he was fighting him. Now, fast forward, you know what's coming because David's going to do the same thing. He's going to have Bathsheba's husband killed fighting in a battle. It was like a very covert way of killing someone to send them into military battle.
But there's a contrast here between David and Saul.
Right.
David, the man after God's own heart,
right,
who ends up forgiven for that.
Yes.
And Saul, who never repents for anything.
Correct. Saul's never going to repent for this. David is. All right. However, in this case, David is not feeling worthy of becoming a son-in-law to Saul. So he kind of puts that off, and Saul ends up giving Merab to Adriel in marriage. With that plan failed, Saul sees another opportunity in his other daughter, Michal.
Verse 20. Now, Saul's daughter Michal was in love with David, and when they told Saul about it, he was pleased. "I will give her to him," he thought, "so that she may become a snare to him and so that the hand of the Philistines may be against him." So Saul said to David, "Now you have a second opportunity to become my son-in-law." Then Saul ordered his attendants, speak to David privately and say, look, the king likes you and his attendants all love you. Now become his son-in-law. They repeated these words to David, but David said, do you think it is a small matter to become the king's son-in-law? I am only a poor man and little known. When Saul's servants told him what David had said, Saul replied, say to David, the king wants no other price for the bride than 100 Philistine foreskins to take revenge on his enemies. Saul's plan was to have David fall by the hands of the Philistines.
Oh my gosh, can you just not see Saul rolling his eyes in disgust? He's trying to kill this guy and it doesn't matter what he offers. He's not, David thinks he's not worthy. He has to be so disgusted with David's humility. David thinks himself beneath Saul's daughters and keeps refusing Saul no matter what he offers. His pure heart is interfering with Saul's covert plan to get him killed. So to entice David to feel worthy, Saul puts a bride price on Michal of 100 Philistine foreskins. That means, you know, 100 guys. And David is cool with killing Philistines because they're enemies of the Lord. What is not cool is that Saul has no regard for his daughter Michal, who loves David and would not want to see him die fighting the Philistines. So just so you know, Saul just doesn't care about those girls.
Continuing in verse 26, when the attendants told David these things, he was pleased to become the king's son-in-law. So before the allotted time elapsed, David took his men with him and went out and killed 200 Philistines and brought back their foreskins. They counted out the full number to the king so that David might become the king's son-in-law. Then Saul gave him his daughter Michal in marriage.
Saul's plan backfires. David kills 200 Philistines, doubling the bride price without being killed himself. Saul has to give David his daughter Michal and acknowledge David as his son-in-law. And of course, David's favor as a warrior grows with the people. The people love him even more.
Verse 28, when Saul realized that the Lord was with David and that his daughter Michal loved David, Saul became still more afraid of him, and he remained his enemy the rest of his days. The Philistine commanders continued to go out to battle. As often as they did, David met with more success than the rest of Saul's officers, and his name became well known.
Three times in this chapter alone, we have read that the Lord was with David and that Saul was afraid of David. Like Joseph in Genesis 39, the Lord was with David and he found favor. I've talked about that a lot in Bible Book Club, finding favor. You know, it's a thing I have, and gosh, we're going to get to it when we get to Esther in a big way. But finding favor is something I pray for all the time. Wisdom and character come from the Lord. People can actually see it. And it will lead to finding favor with those who are attracted to the Lord. Or it will lead to falling out of favor with those who reject the Lord. David found favor with Jonathan because Jonathan loved the Lord. And David fell out of favor with Saul because Saul did not love the Lord. Saul loved himself, and Saul became jealous of David, making him an enemy for the rest of his life. In chapter 19, Saul's attempts to murder David go from covert to overt. Saul wants David dead, and he doesn't care who knows about it anymore. But Saul's own children, first Jonathan and then Michal, protect David. Scene 5, Jonathan protects David first.
Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David. But Jonathan had taken a great liking to David and warned him, "My father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are. I'll speak to him about you and will tell you what I find out." Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, "Let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life into his hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for all Israel, and you saw it and were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason?" Saul listened to Jonathan and took this oath, "As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death." So Jonathan called David and told him the whole conversation. He brought him to Saul, and David was with Saul as before. Once more, war broke out, and David went out to fight the Philistines. He struck them with such force that they fled before him. But an evil spirit from the Lord came on Saul, and he was sitting in his house with his spear in his hand. While David was playing the lyre, Saul tried to pin him to the wall with his spear, but David eluded him, and Saul drove the spear into the wall. That night, David made good his escape.
Oh my gosh, can you just feel Jonathan's pain? You can almost see that he sees clearly what David is about to become, but at the same time, he can't make his father see it. He's such a peacemaker. He's so loyal to both his father and David that he wants them to come together in this. Desperately, he wants his father to see the way of things and submit to God's will. David is going to be king one day, not himself, Jonathan, and his father needs to accept David's growing political favor. David, too, wants a godly transfer of authority and a relationship with Saul. And David even risks his life by returning to Saul, but in the end, he must flee. Saul is given every chance, but that evil spirit gets the better of him every time. Scene 6. Next, Michal protects David.
Verse 11. Saul sent men to David's house to watch it and to kill him in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, warned him, "If you don't run for your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed." So Michal let David down through a window, and he fled and escaped. Then Michal took an idol and laid it on the bed, covering it with a garment and putting some goat's hair at the head.
All right, little side note here. The fact that Michal possessed idols gives us a small detail about her heart.
She was her father's daughter.
She loves David. She may love the Lord, but maybe not as purely or as knowledgeably as her brother Jonathan.
Verse 14, when Saul sent the men to capture David, Michal said, "He's ill." Then Saul sent the men back to see David and told them, "Bring him up to me in his bed so that I may kill him." But when the men entered, there was the idol in the bed, and at the head was some goat's hair. Saul said to Michal, "Why did you deceive me like this and send my enemy away so he escaped?" Michal told him, "He said to me, 'Let me go away. Why should I kill you?'"
So consider that Jonathan and Michal are siblings, each protecting David from their own father. Jonathan protects David outside of the home, and Michal protects David inside of the home. Both of them were well aware of their father's delusional ways and protected David at great risk to their own lives. It must have given David much needed encouragement. He was young, obedient, humble, and conscientious. To run from his king, Saul, must have been conflicting for him. The support of the king's children, urging him that to run was the only option, was a gift of encouragement from the Lord. God knew David's heart, and he provided David with the support he needed. God does the same today. At the age of 17, I had a cardiac arrest. Throughout many surgeries and complications, I have clung to one verse starting in Revelation. Well, it's actually several verses starting in Revelation 3:7.
"These are the words of him who is holy and true, who holds the key of David. What he opens, no one can shut, and what he shuts, no one can open. I know your deeds. See, I have placed before you an open door that no one can shut. I know that you have little strength, yet you have kept my word and have not denied my name."
These are the words of him who holds the key of David. Jesus is the one who holds the key of David. The key to the house of the Lord, the key to the kingdom of God. Jesus holds the key to the door of eternal life. He opened that door for all to walk through. Now track with me here. God knows your heart just as he knew David's heart and just as he knows my heart. And he places before you doors that no one can shut. In my case, even if you have a heart problem. He knows that you have little strength and feel ill-equipped for what he has called you to do. But he will help you through that door because you have kept his word and not denied his name, just as he did for David. Scene 7. Samuel protects David this time. Where do you go when you feel overwhelmed by opposition? David returned to the man of God who had anointed him way back in the beginning. David needed and craved godly advice by this time. Even though McCall and Jonathan had saved him, he's on the run now. When there seems to be nowhere to go, go to the source of your knowledge of God, the Bible, a pastor, a mentor. In this scene, God works through Samuel to protect David because David ran to him.
1 Samuel 19, continuing in verse 18. When David had fled and made his escape, he went to Samuel at Ramah and told him all that Saul had done to him. Then he and Samuel went to Naoth and stayed there. Word came to Saul, David is in Naoth at Ramah. So he sent men to capture him. But when they saw a group of prophets prophesying with Samuel standing there as their leader, the Spirit of God came on Saul's men, and they also prophesied. Saul was told about it, and he sent more men, and they prophesied too. Saul sent men a third time, and they also prophesied.
Saul sends three groups of men to capture David. Each time, the men were met by Samuel and a group of prophets. And each time, the Spirit of God came upon Saul's men, and they too prophesied. What does that mean, prophesied? Well, there were lots of commentaries on this. The majority agree that Saul's men were irresistibly caught up in praise and song. They were no longer masters of themselves, and their minds were distracted from their mission to capture David. Saul is perplexed and frustrated and heads off to Ramah himself. Here in chapter 19. But this trip parallels another trip to Ramah, which happened way back in chapter 9. This is a deja vu trip for Saul.
1 Samuel 19, verse 22. Finally, he himself left for Ramah and went to the great cistern at Siku. And he asked, where are Samuel and David? Over at Naoth, at Ramah, they said. So Saul went to Naoth at Ramah, but the Spirit of God came even on him. And he walked along prophesying until he came to Naoth. He stripped off his garments and he too prophesied in Samuel's presence. He lay naked all that day and all that night. This is why the people say, is Saul also among the prophets?
Okay, so this whole thing sounds crazy. Saul's now naked. But track with me here. And if you want, go back and study these verses because this is a deja vu, hilarious trip. Chapter 9 and chapter 19 in 1 Samuel are a mocking picture of Saul's spiritual journey. In chapter 9, verse 6, Saul went to Ramah looking for those donkeys, remember? Then in chapter 19, verse 22, Saul went to Ramah looking for David. In chapter 9, verse 11, Saul comes to a well and asks for Samuel. Where is Samuel? In chapter 19, verse 22, Saul comes to a well and asks for Samuel and David. How can Saul not remember doing this before? It totally blows my mind. Like, he has to be thinking, have I been here before? God was sending him a message and he doesn't get it. In chapter 10, verse 6, Saul prophesied with a procession of prophets. In chapter 19, 23, Saul prophesies with a group of prophets. He's out of his head. He's singing songs and psalms when he's really trying to look for David. In chapter 10, verse 11, the people see Saul prophesying and marvel that he is among the prophets. In chapter 19, verse 24, the people see Saul prophesying naked and joke about him being, among the prophets. In chapter 11, verse 6, the Spirit came upon Saul and invests him with authority to defeat the enemy. In chapter 19, verse 24, the Spirit comes upon Saul and divests him of his clothes. So the one time when he became king, he's invested with authority, and now he's divested of his clothes. When Saul began his ministry, the Spirit of God came upon him and he prophesied. It was a sign to Saul that God could do miraculous things through him as king if he had a heart for the Lord. Now Saul was trying to prevent God's plan by killing David. And God once again sent the Spirit of God upon him, and he prophesied, naked, no longer a candidate for king, stripped of his royal robes. God was making an important point to Saul. His royal robes are gone. He's naked. God gave him power and position, and God took it away. God is in control. We will learn that David's going to escape again from the situation saved by Samuel. But what happened to Saul when the prophesying inducing spirit left him and he woke up, when he came to his senses and realized, oh my gosh, what am I doing here naked? What did he feel? Did he feel like Adam and Eve in the garden? Was he ashamed? Did it dawn on him like it did on them what he had done? Did he clearly see the deja vu parallel between his rise to kingship and his fall from it? Or perhaps was there a deep sense of loss, a hole in his heart, because he had been prophesying in the spirit, singing songs and psalms? Was there a vacuum where the spirit of the Lord had once filled him? Did he feel as empty and naked on the inside as he was on the outside? Was there an overwhelming sense of the loss of a lifetime? Because Saul had disobeyed the God who had given him the opportunity to establish his kingdom forever. As we close this scene, I feel like Saul is in despair and David is fleeing. But one is with the Lord and one is without. Which would you rather be?
What's a club without friends? If you're enjoying the Bible Book Club, why don't you share it? And then you can say,
Welcome to the club.
New episodes drop every Monday, and get all episodes now on Amazon Music. As always, head over to susanmee.com/Bible Book Club for show notes from today's episode. Bible Book Club is hosted by Susan Merrill and Heather Rubio, edited by Buck Buchanan, produced by Haley Mawat.